You are listening to Concert Blast.
Rap put the bullet in a rock and roll's head. And left them for dead. We all need the human touch. I need it, the human touch. You ought to know it's an affair of the heart. It's an affair of the heart. It's an affair of the heart. Have a little blind faith.
Tennessee, you're listening to Concert Blast.
Hi, I'm Charlotte from West Palm Beach, Florida. You're listening to Concert Blast.
Hey, this is Kathy from Rock Hill, South Carolina, and you are listening to Concert Blast.
This is Kathleen from Toronto, Canada, and you are listening to Concert Blast.
Hi, I'm Deanna from West Palm Beach, Florida, and you're listening to Concert Blast.
Hi, this is Rick Springfield, and you're listening to Concert Blast. My friends Mike, Brian, and Tom.
Concert Blast. This is Mike Arnold along with
Tom Thompson.
Too bad Brian Hasbrook's not here tonight, huh?
You know he's missing this.
Yeah, we're back here at the Wild Horse Saloon again. First time in the 2008, and we're so excited. We're here to see one of our favorites from the 80s. Mr. Who?
Bruce.
I knew it was coming.
That's pretty good.
Ladies and gentlemen, come on. He knows his name. He's going to tell us in a minute.
That's right.
It starts with a...
R.
Rick. Rick Spring...
Field.
Rick Springfield.
Very good. We're here tonight for Rick Springfield. He's doing two nights in Nashville, Tennessee at the Wild Horse Saloon, and everybody's excited. They started lining up before we got here, and we got here, what, a quarter to three?
Yeah.
And they're going down the line already, and they're fighting over their good seats.
Yeah, it's, the last gig here was amazing, so we booked here for two nights this time. It's a great crowd.
Yeah, we're...
Yes.
I have never seen you in concert before, and that's odd for us to say that we've never seen somebody. But we're looking forward tonight. We wanted to see you back in the fall, when you came here back in the fall. Mm-hmm. We had some family issues.
Yeah.
But we're glad we're here tonight, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us, Rick.
Sure.
All right. To get started, I wanted to say, not everybody knew this, that I talked to so far, and I told them I was on my way down to talk to you, that you're from Australia?
That's right, mate. Yeah, I was born in Sydney, Australia, and I moved to Melbourne. And then when I was about 9 years old, I moved to England, and my accent changed a little bit. I lived outside London for about 3 years, and then I came back to Australia, and it started to broaden out again. And then when I was 21, I moved to America, and suddenly a new accent sprouted up, and I've been here since 1972.
Tell us what came first. Playing music or acting?
Oh, music, absolutely, without question. I was in England. I was about 9 years old, 10 years old, and I held my first guitar backstage at a school, you know, the school Christmas pageant thing, and fell in love. And right then and there, so it was guitars before girls, really. I mean,
wow.
It really was. I still love guitars. I have guitars all over my house. I've never met a guitar I didn't like, and it was just been a passion. I started writing, and that kind of added something to it. And I love music. I got into acting really to support myself in between record deals, which was kind of naive because every actor at the time was waiting tables to between acting gigs, you know. But it worked out actually. I think my fact that I was so naive and innocent, I actually did support myself with acting for quite a while till I finally got a deal and wrote the right songs.
So how did you land the role in these movies and the TV shows? How did you land a role? How did that come about?
Well, I actually put on a showcase with the girlfriend I was seeing at the time, and we paid for this little theater and built the sets ourselves and put on this little one-act play and invited every agent down that, you know, they'd say, oh, yeah, sure, just tell us when you're doing a play and we'll come down. Of course, nobody came down, but one guy came down from Universal, and Universal had contract players at the time. It was the last of the contract players, which is where they pay the actor a salary and a monthly salary, and whatever the actor can get, you still have to read for the part, you still have to get the part, mm-hmm. but you get up on things that, you know, they favor you kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, but it was the first regular money I'd ever seen in my life. I was getting like, I don't know, $500 a week or something, and I thought it was the greatest thing in the world.
At that time, it probably was.
It was incredible. It was incredible. Yeah, I thought, all right, this is the beginning. Remember the first part I got was $6 Million Man. I played a bad guy on that and couldn't believe I actually got the part.
Great.
And then I did their shows like Wonder Woman, Incredible Hulk, what's the James Garner show that was the big
Rockford
beat?
Files?
Rockford Files. Wow. I played an English rock star on that threw a pool on the piano. piano in the pool. I mean.
Wow.
But it was great. It was really, you know, and then I got Battlestar Galactica, which was a small part on that, which was really kind of the first time that I got any kind of notice as far as actually, you know, me as an actor. And then I took some time off involuntarily because no one was hiring me, and landed a record deal with RCA and also General Hospital, like within 2 weeks.
Well, how did the General Hospital thing come in? They just contacted you?
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, they were trying to do a male Charlie's Angels back in like 1978. Mm. And, you know, and they're seeing every young guy in town, and I went up on it, and the guy liked me, but it never turned into a show. I don't think they ever got off the ground, but he remembered me, and then he ended up being the casting guy for General Hospital, and they were looking for a new doctor, and he remembered me from that like 2 years ago. So he called up my agent, who was by that time was like dropped me and completely thought I was worthless, and said, well, we want Rick to read for this part. And the agent called me, said, guess what, we think we've got you an interview.
Wow. Are you still on there from time to time?
I went back about a year ago. Right. I was on there for about a year, and you know, did a story arc, and that's done. And you know, if something else comes up that's interesting on the show, I go back. But it was just to kind of to, you know, because pop radio is kind of, you know, it's having a tough time. Everyone's doing whatever they can on TV. I think TV is certainly an avenue, and it seemed like an honest avenue for me because it was a character that I'd done before. So I went back on it for a while just to see, you know, how that would translate. We actually ended up doing a new song on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But, setting my sights a little higher acting-wise, too. You know, I want to do nighttime shows and things like that.
Any interest in Broadway?
I did a Broadway thing at Smokey Joe's. I was on Smokey Joe's for a while. And, yeah, I'd be interested in that. I'm very, very much a homebody, you know. So the thought of going away for, like, 6 months anywhere, doing anything other than my own music it's got to be a pretty big pull. I've had a couple of some interest for different Broadway shows, but nothing that I was kind of thought was worth, you know, going there for that long for. But, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say, never say no. I never say no automatically to anything.
Right, exactly right.
I'm kind of a Michael Caine like that, where, you know, you kind of take everything.
Yeah. Right. Tell us a little bit about your family.
I have two boys, 22 and 18, and they're both musicians, but the younger one is wants to be a doctor too. And
a real doctor, not
a
television.
Real doctor. No, not a cheap and easy doctor.
He's taking after his dad, right?
Yeah. And been married for 3 years. And
wow.
We've been together for 27.
And you live in California, is that
yeah.
right?
Yep.
How does your wife take it with you going on stage and all the girls screaming for you and carrying on?
She has a very healthy sense of humor about it.
But she does.
Yeah, we've been through it all. We have been absolutely through it all. She was, you know, we started dating before Jesse's Girl was released. Mm. So we kind of both got caught up in the whole thing together. We're both pretty young and innocent, and we kind of got dragged through that hand in hand, you know, with everything that goes with it, and the great stuff too. I mean, it was a lot of great stuff. So we've kind of weathered the storm, you know, with all that.
I read on the internet where you wrote something about something that you and your family went through the day after Thanksgiving. Can you explain that to everybody, our listeners?
Oh, yeah, right. I got some really great vintage guitars, and I've got some guitars signed by people that I love, you know. And were inspirations growing up, you know, guitar signed by them, and I the fire is coming over the hill. We get used to fires in Malibu, you know, it's just a part of the scene. And so I'm throwing some of these guitars into my car, and then I realize, wait a minute, I'm going to stay and fight the fire, so my car's not moving, so my car's full of gasoline, so it's probably not a good idea to load my guitars into the car. So I start loading them into my son's car, and he said, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay here and fight the fire with you. Yeah. So I was basically had to save the house at that point.
And you threw all the furniture, the pool furniture in the pool?
The outdoor furniture. You do that. You throw all anything wood you throw into the pool.
All right.
But also, I just bought a pool pump, which, you know, is a pump. You throw one end into the pool and the other
and
end is a fire hose.
Yeah.
And I hadn't read the instructions. So the fire's coming over the hill, and like I'm sitting there, my hands are shaking. I'm trying to read this instructions on how to start this pump up. And I finally got it working, but it was a bad time to try and figure that out.
Who are some of your favorite bands and music?
A lot of it's English. I mean, I started getting into music when I was about 11 in England, and it was before the Beatles, and there was a huge band called the Shadows, and they were probably the closest American thing to them is Adventures, but the Shadows are much deeper than that. It wasn't just surf tunes. It was, you know, it was probably more like spaghetti Western music, probably to American ears. But it was really amazing songs. They're really great instrumental. And Hank Marvin was the lead guitar player, and he was every English guitar player's inspiration, from Jimmy Page to Brian May to Eric Clapton to Ritchie Blackmore to Tommy Iommi. Everybody says he was the first guy because he was local, and he was the first one they looked up to, and everybody has paid him, you know, homage, but they just never made it in America. They were huge everywhere else. So that was the first band, and then the Shadows, and then the Beatles came along. And
say, I want to do this, right?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to do it back then with the Shadows. I used to lip sync their records with the tennis upside down tennis racket, and we'd put my friends behind me with old tennis rackets.
Little air guitar, huh?
And look at ourselves in the living room window, you know.
Oh, wow, that's pretty cool.
You told us your influences. Who do you listen to today?
A lot of the old stuff that I grew up with. You know, a lot of music on the road is kind of comfort music for me. I put, you know, the Shadows on. I put all the Beatles stuff on. But I put it on. I listen to a lot of new stuff because of my kids. I like a lot of the harder stuff. Like my son just turned me on to the old Snot album, which I think is incredible. But it's really funny because my iPod will go from like Frank Sinatra to Tool to surf music to Queens of the Stone Age to, you know,
Queens of the Stone Age,
Mozart, you know. So it's they're actually them and the Foo Fighters are my two favorite later bands.
You've got a new album coming out the day after yesterday. Tell us a little bit about it.
Actually, day after yesterday has been out, and I'm writing a new record right now.
Okay.
The day after yesterday was a bunch of covers.
Yes, that's right.
From the era that I started having hits in, and I wanted to cover some of the songs that I basically wish I'd written. But it's a very mellow record, you know. And this next one is the first original album I've done in a couple of years.
Are you in the middle of writing it right now?
Yeah, we just got finished writing. We're going to start recording in March. Actually.
Okay. Now, where can I hear Who Killed Rock and Roll?
That's one of the tracks off it.
Okay.
That was for sale on iTunes. We put the live version up on iTunes for a while. I don't know if it's still there. You can get it on our site, rickspringfield.com. I only picked that because rickspringfieldpixiesnose.com had already been taken. But so you can get that there. And it's kind of a bit of a preview. It's probably one of the hardest songs that will be on the record. The record is going to be more, you know, guitar, more like Working Class Dog kind of stuff, you know.
Do you have a song or songs that you like playing live in concert?
I always love playing Love Somebody because it's a great, a real simple kind of straightforward rock song, and it just always works live. And I always write with a thought to what it's going to sound like live. I mean, I've written whole albums because I wrote an album called Living in Oz, because at that point I didn't think I had enough up-tempo rock stuff, so I wrote the whole album based on what I wanted to play live, you know.
Give us a typical day when you're not on the road, but you're at home. Typical day in the life of Rick Springfield.
Wake up late.
What's late? What's late?
No,
late
like 10 or 11. Oh, I love to sleep. I love to sleep. I always... and me and my dog go down to local stores, and I get go to the health food store and get a couple of shots of, you know, ginger shots and some things like that, and then take him around to see all his friends, because everybody knows my dog in Malibu.
Oh, that's
got, like,
great.
Treats
that's
for him.
Cool.
He thinks that's his job, you know, to go cheer everybody up. And then I go back and back home and write for a while. I go work out, and I'll go and write and wait for 5 o'clock so I can have a beer.
There you go.
Not before 5, huh?
But it's always it's 5 o'clock somewhere in the world.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
I've heard that.
Tell us, if you can keep it as clean as possible, what's the craziest thing you saw while you were performing that the audience was doing or something out there that went crazy?
It's not really the craziest thing. It's a girl standing in the front row, and people are throwing their underwear up, and she took her jeans off and... took her underwear off and threw her underwear up and put her jeans back on right in the front, right in the front row. And the security guards are going, ha, ha, ha.
Oh, I bet they were.
They were not about to stop her. But it was, you know, I mean, it's really the thing. It's a big party. It's just I want everyone to have as good a time as I'm having, you know, live. So that show's very audience driven. It's very driven by the momentum of the audience, and it always has been. And I think when I started touring again in the early 90s, whatever, I was worried that it would that energy wouldn't be there anymore. You know, I thought they'd just kind of look at it and applaud each song. But once I saw the audience was still into the whole vibe, made me want to stay on the road.
So you've been on the road for how long now?
This last time has been about 10 years.
Wow.
But we go out a couple of days a week and then go home. And, you know, I never couldn't stay out for 3 months at a time anymore. You know, we all have families. We all have other things that we want to do, and we all have studios, and we write, and you know, I've got acting stuff, and it's just, you know, you don't want to spend your life on the road.
Do you prefer playing large arenas or stadiums versus small clubs, or
They both have a benefit. I mean, obviously, you want your music to reach the most people that it can, because that's what you do it for. Otherwise, it would sit on the shelf. You know, you want to share, and you want to be part of that whole thing. So that's what, you know, obviously there's an energy in a big place. Like we played in Germany in 85. It was a racetrack of like 250,000 people. And it was, the energy from that was physical, you know. I felt like I weighed about 40 pounds on stage.
Wow. When was this?
It was in called Nürburgring. It's a racetrack in Germany.
Uh-huh. When was that?
85.
Wow. Yeah.
Some of the best shows we've done have been like, you know, little clubs where everybody's kind of packed real tight and, you know, hot and sweaty. And that's got its own energy, too.
Do you always end up out in the crowd?
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of the show.
Every picture I see is you're out in the crowd on top of a table. And
oh, wow.
I read where tables are breaking. You ever had any embarrassing moments?
There's been tables collapsing. But, you know, everyone's pressed so tight that no one really gets hurt, because if I'm falling, there's always someone to grab me, or someone's falling beside me. They can't. There's someone, you know, there's always someone behind them holding them up. I did fall on a girl once, and she was awesome. She was just happy to have been fallen on. You know, it was great. So, you know, it was...
She liked it, huh?
Yeah, there's
well, so you ought to do that more often,
we
people.
We have a great crowd. We have a great crowd that comes to the shows.
Yeah.
Last question. What are you most thankful for?
My family, having the freedom to pursue things that I love, and being on this planet, and specifically being in this country at this time of the world. In this time of the world, you know, that I have an awareness that things aren't as they, you know, as they should be, and there's a lot to do to try and help the world. I'm very, you know, I'm very involved in a lot of different charities, and but I'm also very much behind cleaning up the world, you know, cleaning up all the crap that is being dumped. And, you know, I think that's really the major issue for me, because if there's no world, doesn't matter how much money we throw at whatever country, we're all going to go anyway. Yeah. So it's a pretty amazing time to be alive, and I'm really thankful I wasn't, you know, that I didn't off myself when I was a teenager when I was really depressed because I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
How were you as a teenager? Were you rebellious or were you just happy-go-lucky?
No, man, I was a monster.
Oh, no.
I was a nightmare. 15, 16, 17 were the worst years of my life. I was just the most depressed, dark, horrible kid. Didn't go to school, got kicked out of school. I mean, I had, if I was my parent, I would have thought this kid's a loser and is just, he'll gonna end up on the streets. And I had no prospects. I mean, it was just, and I was gonna go back to school and redo the year that I'd screwed up. It was 11th grade. I got kicked out, and I was just getting ready to go back and hated it and didn't want to do it and hated school, absolutely hated school. And my mom came into my bedroom one day and said, "There's a guy out in the living room named Pete Watson, who to me was a huge Australian star back then. He was a very big star. Said he wants you to play in his band."
Oh, wow.
And that changed my life. I said, "Okay, I'm there, baby." And that was what set me on the right path, because I would have made a terrible, I don't know, accountant or whatever my mom wanted me to be, electrician or whatever.
Well, Rick, we thank you for the time you've taken away.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate it. And everybody get out there and be ready for his new album. He's in the middle of writing and about to record. And if he's coming through your town, I guarantee you, you're going to see a fabulous show. And I'm looking forward to this one tonight.
Yeah, I have an amazing band, really, really heavy band. And everyone's really surprised at how heavy the band is and how tough the songs sound. Because they still, a lot of the stuff, I think, really holds up with all the new stuff, you know.
Right.
Very good.
Cool. Very good. Thank you again, Rick Springfield, everybody.
Yeah.
Well, we just had a wonderful talk with Rick Springfield, as you heard.
Yes, it was a great interview. We really enjoyed Rick, and he was just overly pleasant and had a great time.
And we want to thank Ronnie for helping us out once we got here, looking for us and making sure we're all right. And he had everything so smooth. It's never been that smooth, has it?
Absolutely. I mean, we walked in and, we're looking for you and this and that. And, hey, we're going to find a separate room for you. So it was very accommodating, and we definitely appreciate it.
We also thank the management of Rick Springfield, and we also thank the publicist who actually helped me line all this up. Thank you, Elena, for all the emails and for helping me out here, helping us all out here, actually. And our listeners, which brings us up to, don't forget to vote for us.
Hey, that's right. You know, go to our website, and in the far right-hand corner, there's a little icon that says vote. Just click on that and vote for us. You don't have to leave a comment. If you want to, that's great. Leave us a nice little comment.
There you go. Always send us an email, concertblast@gmail.com. Don't forget to send us your thoughts on not only this show, but all of our shows. And until next time, this is Mike signing off.
And this is Tom signing off.
And for Brian Hasbrook, who's out of town on work.
I know, he's killing him. He's just killing him, missing this. Too bad, Brian.
Till next time, God bless you.
We'll see ya.
I want to thank you for letting me be myself again.
I get the bow.
You get the low boo.
How low can you go?